You're listening to Radio Boston. I'm Carrie Young. Many autistic people say they often face a societal pressure to adhere to neurotypical standards. But the Asperger Autism Network, based here in Massachusetts, is creating spaces for autistic people to be their authentic selves. Two people with the organization are here to tell us more about that. Joining us in Studio 2 are Ryan Walsh. Hi, Ryan.
Hi.
And Maggie Bowlby.
Hi.
Hello. Thanks for coming in. Okay, so you both have had unique journeys that has led you towards doing this work or working with the Asperger Autism Network. Can you tell us a little bit more about that and how your life has influenced your work? So, Ryan, I'll start with you.
Sure. So I'm a neurodiversity training specialist at A&E. I've been employed at A&E officially for 2 years, but I've been speaking on behalf of A&E Speakers Bureau since I was 13 years old. So that's about 12 years now. And it's definitely been a long journey for sure.
Okay, great. Maggie, I want you to weigh in too. How have you gotten to this place?
I am currently the Assistant Director of Individual and Family Services at A&E. I like to say that I'm a recovering teacher. I was in the classroom as a special education teacher, teaching a classroom of autistic kids for about 8 years. And then I took some time from the classroom, as many teachers do, and I was looking for a way to stay involved with the autistic community. And I found A&E life map coaching. And so I did that for a little bit. And then I, very luckily a year ago, transitioned to being on staff.
Okay. Would you say that your this current job has also influenced your life? Has it gone the other way around?
Very much so. My husband is autistic.
Okay.
So my journey as a teacher very much influenced that part of my life, and helping him actually to discover that he's autistic and to unmask and embody his true self a little bit more. And the education I've gained as an A&E employee has also been vital in my marriage. So it's really close to home.
Oh, great. Okay. Well, I want to ask David, or Ryan, excuse me, the next question. It seems autism diagnoses have been on the rise in the past decade alone. The amount of autistic people enrolled in special education in Massachusetts anyway rose from about 4,800 to 26,000. So what sorts of changes have you observed in the autism community as more people are joining?
Yeah, I think that a lot of the reason that those numbers have gone up have to do with our ability to identify individuals who are autistic. And there's also, you know, historically, people who have been diagnosed with autism have been generally boys, young boys, or men. And we've also really improved our ability to find autism in women and in young girls as well, because we found that it's presented differently, and there's been a lot of research around that. I think there's also been a lot of research in the way that we approach it and the way that we create those kind of like special education spaces, and we find that there are a lot more people who need accommodations than, you know, previously maybe we realized in the past. And so I think a lot of it has to do with improved methods of identification for sure.
Okay. And Ryan, you are a member of the autism community, correct?
Yes, I'm autistic.
Okay. So I want you to reflect a little bit, too, since you, you know, are involved in autism culture, know what that is. If you could reflect on this increase that we're seeing in diagnoses, how does that affect the culture?
I think it affects the culture in a positive way, because I think that, you know, having more people with that kind of solidarity and also just like creating that openness in society where, you know, there's it's less kind of like looked down upon and more of like an empowering positive kind of thing. And I think that, you know, the autism community as a whole is very welcoming and, you know, is very diverse. And so to see an increase in diversity and to see an increase in the number of people that are participating is great. I find that to be great.
Great. Yeah, also, Maggie, jump in.
Yeah, as a member of the neurodivergent community, I'm an ADHDer. I would also wonder if there's kind
and
of like
that's attention deficit.
Attention deficit hyperactivity disorder.
Okay, great. Thank
there you.
There
you go, I think. The one thing I would say is that it's a little bit cyclical. You know, there's this movement on social media that is destigmatizing neurodiversity, and that in turn leads more people to realize that they're neurodivergent, join the community, which leads to this greater acceptance and movement in that direction.
Yeah, I was just going to ask about that because I know that, you know, thumbing through Instagram and TikTok, you see all kinds of communities, really of any, you know, whether it's religious or, you know, you name it, there is a social media community around that. And so it's interesting to hear that it's blossomed around this community as well. All right, we're talking about the need for neurodivergent people to have spaces to be themselves. Ryan Walsh is in the studio with us, as well as Maggie Bowlby. They're both with the Asperger Autism Network. So I want to talk a little bit next with Ryan to talk about how society views autism right now. My understanding is in conversations with Jacob, who produced this segment with me, that the severity of someone's autism is often based on how much of a nuisance that they might be to others. Can you dive into that a little bit more? I mean, do you feel good about that idea?
Yeah, I think it's something that as an organization we work really hard to combat, actually, because I think that there's this idea about functioning and about worthiness and autism being measured by society as essentially the burden that you place on other people. And I think a lot of the work that we do has to do with talking to autistic people, autistic adults, and telling them about, like, you know, you're not the problem. I think a lot of people come into our services feeling like they are the problem because of those societal expectations and the way that society is kind of viewing autism and neurodiversity in general. Yeah, I think that a lot of it has to do with just that negative view overall.
Okay. Maggie, could you talk about reframing, or what are your thoughts about reframing our perception of autistic people in a way that's more progressive and inclusive?
So what we like to say is that no one person is more or less autistic. Autism is a part of a person's identity, should they choose to see it that way. And instead of saying, I need to put this autistic person into a bucket, I need to maybe prove that they communicate verbally and can hold a job, or I need to prove that they need more support, you don't need to prove anything. You can just describe the person you're talking about, and it's a little bit more work. You know, you don't get to put a person into a bucket and describe them in one word. But at the end of the day, it's really helpful in seeing autistic children, autistic adults, people all over their lifespan, seeing people as people.
Right. Yeah. The terms like high functioning or low functioning. So my understanding is that we really shouldn't be using those words anymore. It sounds like that's what you're telling me too.
Exactly. What we find is that a person who is labeled as high functioning might internalize that and might think that they aren't able to ask for support, or they don't deserve support because they're supposed to be high functioning. Whereas a person who is viewed as low functioning, that's often discrediting a wide variety of skills that that person has and what that person brings to the world and is worthy of.
Okay. Ryan, I want to ask you about a term I think actually that Maggie brought up earlier. It was about unmasking. And first, can you just define that for me?
Yeah, I think, you know, part of creating authentic spaces for autistic people has to do with kind of creating space where people can unmask. And for anybody who doesn't know, masking is like when autistic people try to cover up their perceivably autistic traits so that way they can fit in more with society. It's kind of like a camouflage. And I think unmasking is so important because it removes a lot of that pressure, a lot of the anxiety and the internal resources that are spent on trying to fit in, trying to look like something that you're not all day. And I think that when we're creating spaces, we encourage people to unmask, but we also acknowledge that masking is a survival mechanism for some autistic people, and that, you know, a lot of masking is a personal journey. And what we do is we kind of try to assist people in that.
Okay. I mean, is masking a good thing, bad thing, or is it just a thing? How would you describe that, Ryan?
Yeah, I would say it's kind of just a thing in a way. I think that it causes some autistic people to suffer, for sure, to an extent. But I think that there's also sometimes where it's kind of just a survival mechanism. Sometimes right. It's comforting. Sometimes it's just something that people do for security. And we want to acknowledge that, you know, we don't want to make anybody feel insecure either. Like, it's, we want them to do it on their own time, on their own way. And I think that there's always a, you know, different levels of masking that different autistic people are doing. For sure.
Right. Yeah. Maggie, I want you to jump in next. I see you nodding your head.
Yeah. It's also just really important, I think, to name, as Ryan said, it can be a survival skill. It's something, especially in the black and brown communities, when we think about interacting with like police officers or just the world in general, it can truly be something that is not as much of a choice for people without that level of privilege.
Okay. Maggie, I'm going to stick with you and ask about, I know the Asperger Autism Network hosts several social events for participants to have these kinds of safe spaces. So tell me about them. What do you guys offer?
So we offer a wide variety of both support and social groups. So our support groups are really like connection-based, inviting people to come and talk about what's hard for them in a room of people who have often had very similar experiences. There's always different presentations in the room. For social events, we run game nights over Zoom. We run
Dungeons and Dragons.
We do. We have actually quite a robust Dungeons and Dragons program. We just have rolled out beginner Dungeons and Dragons. We're on our second round of it, so people can come and learn. We find that a lot of folks benefit from having more of a structure to the way that they're connecting with folks, because it's just kind of, it takes a level of pressure off. Like, right. I'm not having to think of as much about like what to say to connect with this person. I have, you know, someone's hosting a game night, someone is running Dungeons and Dragons. We have an outdoor enthusiast club that meets in the Boston area that goes out hiking. We have a movie discussion group, which is also a personal favorite of mine.
What kinds of movies do you guys play?
So we pick, so there's two movie groups, actually. There's one that meets in person and watches a movie and then they discuss it. They just went to see Oppenheimer. And then we have a
great movie.
Yeah, amazing. We have another group that meets and they pick a topic every month. So this month is talk about the actors that you love. So there's no prerequisite. You just have to know that, like, you know, I'm a big Channing Tatum fan. And I want to go talk about Channing Tatum.
Right. And you can just leave it at that.
Yeah.
That's great. Ryan, I want to ask you, this is another sort of term definition question, but autistic joy. Can you tell me what that term means to you? It's something it was a term I just learned about. So yeah, what does that mean?
What it means to me anyway is that there is kind of this unique autistic experience of joy that has to do with authentically expressing one's interests and sharing like your personal feelings with other people. And I think that there is a level of authentic joy that we want to make acceptable and we want to celebrate. Because I think that a lot of the time the people in our community have been told that their joy is not acceptable. They've been told that their joy is something that should be suppressed. And when we're creating those spaces, we want to encourage people to share openly and celebrate each other.
Great. That is so interesting. Thank you both for joining us for this segment. Ryan Walsh with the Asperger Autism Network. Also with the network is Maggie Bowlby. Thanks for coming to Studio 2.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you so much.